Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Terry Cavanaugh.
You're listening to Galesburg Live. I'm Terry Cavanaugh. My guest this hour is Owen Mulder, the director of the Galesburg Colony Underground Railroad Freedom Station at Knox College. And we've been talking about the Underground Railroad and the Freedom Station at Knox College and when it started and different aspects of the Underground Railroad. We're going to get to Samuel G. Wright and his well-kept journal in just a little bit. But just to follow up on the last question, Owen, when the slaves escaped, what did they do? I mean, were their occupations the same? I mean, were they put to work?
Sure.
You know, I mean, they were all getting away, but getting away to what, I guess?
While they were escaping, of course, they had very little. Some of them traveled literally, most of them with some food they might have taken with them, only the clothes on their back. And so initially, what they had to deal with was making sure they could try to get away safely and not be captured. Once a fugitive slave made it to a spot where they felt reasonably safe, many slaves were heading towards Canada because once you crossed the border, you were safe. But many fugitive slaves didn't go that far and decided to take the risk of staying in communities that had been helpful to them or had hidden them. That certainly happens in Galesburg, but in other locations throughout the North. What most of those slaves did in order to have a livelihood is that they did in these free communities exactly what they had done as slaves. Mm-hmm. If you had learned bricklaying as a slave, then you became a bricklayer. If you were a field hand who also had been trained to cut hair, you might open a barber shop. Susan Richardson, whose Underground Railroad case we've talked about, on the air before. Susan Richardson was a fugitive slave in Knoxville and Galesburg who started a laundry. The slave community was essentially divided into two parts. There were field hands. Those were the really hard jobs. But if you were a slave that was a so-called house slave, you did domestic work, and you learned a number of different jobs that had to do with cleaning the house, being a cook, and doing the work that was primarily associated with taking care of the house. So many of those jobs would lend themselves, if you were a free slave, to finding employment in that way.
Because they had been working, and they were skilled in whatever they had been doing. So.
Absolutely. Remarkably skilled. And I alluded to bricklayers. We know, of course, that the White House in Washington, D.C. was, for the most part, built by slaves who had learned the skills to do it.
Mm-hmm. Last month, I started seeing articles that alluded to Owen and a story about Samuel G. Wright, who was a trustee at Knox College and had kept quite the journal. He was among the Underground Railroad conductors. And that's what prompted me to call Owen for today's show was, why am I seeing all these articles and what prompted that? So let's get to the man that prompted these articles. And it's a pretty rich story, Owen. So,
yes, it is. And next, our communications company nationally is affiliated with about 170 local television and regional television stations across the country. And as part of the celebration of Martin Luther King's birthday last month and Black History Month this month, they decided to put together with a number of their affiliates a segment called Hidden History, where they tried to discover important figures having to do primarily with African-American history themes that were individuals that people didn't know a lot about. WMBD over in Peoria came over and taped this segment with me late last year, and then last month and again this month it's been picked up nationally, and consequently you heard about it, mm-hmm. and I've heard from friends around the country who have seen this segment. Samuel G. Wright fit what they wanted perfectly. Here is a man who moves with his family to Canton, Illinois, down in Fulton County. He studies the ministry in Cincinnati at the Lane Seminary, comes back to Western Illinois, and he is essentially made a missionary by George Washington Gale and the people at Knox College. As you know, Knox was founded by abolitionists from upstate New York. And Gale sent right out to do his missionary work, not in South America or in Asia or Africa. He sent him out into Western Illinois. Wright moves up to Henderson, Illinois, just north of OSF, briefly. But then he moves in 1840 to Stark County, to West Jersey Township. When he gets to Henderson, he starts writing a diary, a daily journal of his life, which we have over in the Knox College archives. This is a wonderful piece of original documentation of him helping slaves escape. Now, Terry, for the most part, these are entries about harsh winter storms, crossing the Spoon River one day in his wagon and losing a wheel, family illnesses. He was a minister, of course, and records of the sermons he delivered throughout the area. But then every once in a while, there are wonderful entries he's made. I'll read one to you. February 6, 1843, last week had much severe cold weather. Had to be at home most of the week. On Friday, another fugitive from slavery came along, making 21 that have passed through this settlement on their way to Canada. Today it is extremely cold. The ink freezes in my pen as I try to write beside the stove. So what I did before I wrote my first book, The Underground Railroad in Western Illinois, is that I went through Wright's diary day by day, and anything he jotted down, not only about helping fugitives escape, but also spreading the anti-slavery word throughout the region, I copied down and have included not all, but most of his references to that effort. What's wonderful about this is that there are so few firsthand accounts of helping slaves escape. It was against the National Fugitive Slave Law. It was against the state laws of Illinois to help slaves escape. So it's a wonderful piece of original firsthand documentation.
As you mentioned at the outset of this program, very little was written because they could have been arrested if found, tracked if their diary was
picked up.
I can't believe the diary survived.
Well, we're absolutely delighted that it survived. By the way, after the Civil War and when the 13th Amendment is passed and abolishes slavery, Wright picks up with his family, moves to Kansas, where he addresses another something that was very important in his life. He was part of the temperance movement. He tries to go to Kansas and convince these drovers bringing cattle up to the rail lines in Kansas to stop drinking. He wasn't terribly successful at that. But he was remarkably successful in Illinois at changing a lot of people's attitudes about the Underground Railroad.
That's what you get when you read his journal entries.
Absolutely. Let me read you 1 year later. Now it's July 24th, 1854. Last week, I assisted some in the harvest field and prepared one sermon. On Friday, five fugitives came here who had escaped from their master and labor in Fremont County, Iowa. They were intelligent for men who could not read. One of them said he would not be taken back alive, for he had determined on liberty or death with him. By the mid-1850s, Wright and friends of his had constructed a congregational church in Toulon, Illinois, the county seat of Stark County. And by then, this man Wright, who had come into the county 14, 15 years earlier and not had much support at all, gradually over time changed enough people's minds that his church had adopted his anti-slavery views. So here's an example of one person. You sometimes might say, what can one person do? Here's one person who had a fundamental impact on changing a lot of people's minds about what they came to see as the evil of slavery.
Were a lot of his views based on his own faith?
Yes. In fact, not only Samuel G. Wright, but when you study the anti-slavery movement nationally, particularly in its early stages, the leaders of the movement realized that ministers and religious figures were kind of the hinges that affected attitudes on the part of many people when they went to church to get religious, moral, and ethical judgments about what's right, what's wrong, what's good, and what's bad. So many of these anti-slavery leaders were people who interpreted the Bible to say that Christ's message was a message where everyone has the opportunity to gain salvation if they become a Christian and follow the teachings of what Christ was saying to people about how we determine what is the right course in life. I must add that Southerners pointed to parts of the Bible that referred to slavery, so there were always arguments between Northern religious figures and Southern religious figures on whether or not slavery was in fact an evil or not. But the Northern anti-slavery movement was driven fundamentally, again, particularly in its early years, by people combining their anti-slavery advocacy with their Christian beliefs.
Such as the founders of Knox.
Such as the founders of Knox. In fact, when Gale and the people, the colony, as we say at Knox, the people that followed him out here from New York, when Gale arrives in Western Illinois, he's bringing with him a collection of people who, when they had lived mostly in New York and New England, had already embraced abolitionist attitudes. Mm-hmm. And Galesburg becomes a Western anchor of the anti-slavery movement. And again, Galesburg's proximity to the Mississippi River in the state of Missouri explains to a great extent why from Quincy to Galesburg to Princeton, Chicago, and Canada, there's this not straight line. Mm-hmm. These Underground Railroad routes were not like highways or railroad lines. They zigzagged and weaved around. But but these communities were known fairly early if they had embraced abolitionist principles.
The Illinois River come into play in any of this too?
Owen? Yes, yes. Let me reiterate. When I talk about these routes, they're not straight lines.
Right.
But there were four basic lines. One out of southern Illinois through the central part of the state, Vandalia, Springfield, Bloomington. There was another route that comes more or less out of St. Louis or just north of St. Louis where the Illinois River empties into the Mississippi, where they followed, again, the course of the river. You knew you were heading north, yep, northward if you moved against the current. Another line comes really out of western Missouri and Kansas and goes through Iowa in a kind of bow-shaped line and also through the southeastern corner of Iowa close to Missouri. That route goes up the river and hits the Rock River, which goes through the northern part of the state and bends northward towards Wisconsin. But the fourth line that we're associated with was called the Quincy Line. Quincy, Macomb, Galesburg, Toulon, Princeton, Ottawa, Chicago.
Ottawa, where I grew up.
I knew that, Terry. I remember that.
Yeah, there was a story not too long ago, a year or two ago, about one of the buildings in Ottawa that was talking about the fact that people thought that it had been an Underground Railroad stop or had been used, the basement.
It was. Yeah. Absolutely. So those are the four basic routes. Mm-hmm. But remember this. There's always this to remember. In fact, I'm glad I thought of it. Many of these fugitive slaves, understandably, did not trust anybody who was white. Obviously, their experience had been with white slave owners. So we know that many fugitive slaves got virtually no help from anyone or very little help before they wanted to make their way to freedom on their own because they essentially didn't trust anybody but themselves.
Yeah. Well, and there was even a story in your book about the Underground Railroad in Western Illinois, and I'm not sure if it was Wright's entry or somebody by the name of Todd's entry talking about a group, a family, and then one of them was not necessarily wanting to run away, so they were a little bit leery about, you know, getting told on, I guess.
Oh, yes. Listen, there's no question that the desire for freedom was probably found in the hearts of most slaves, but many of them simply didn't want to take the risk. And Terry, one of the reasons for this, that when you look at the explanation for this, was that many of these fugitive slaves didn't want to have their family split apart. As it is, they had to live with the possibility that their slave owner could take one of their children or their father and sell them away.
Well, that was Sukey Richardson's story.
That's right. But many of them were very reluctant to take the risk of escaping because they were afraid that their life would be much worse off if they were caught, or they simply didn't want to break up the unit of their own family, which is, of course, understandable.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. We'll be back to wrap up with Owen Mulder, the director of the Galesburg Colony Underground Railroad Freedom Station at Knox College.